This show was first broadcast on Fresh FM, the top of the South's community access radio station. For more information on Fresh FM, as well as links to other great locally produced programs, go to our website, freshfm.net.
Hello and welcome to Top Writers. I'm Galen Pound, and in a few moments I will be talking to writer Sally Astridge. Sally has had two adult novels published in the USA and two in the United Kingdom. The Gateway was published in New Zealand in 2010. Her new novel, Time Twins, which she has co-written with well-known Swedish author Anna Nolan, is her first children's book, with the target audience being 9 to 12-year-olds. But first, we're going to hear from Dana.
This is Dana Wensley, and you're listening to Top Writers. I want to take a few moments to talk about PEN. I'm the Freedom of Speech spokesperson for PEN in New Zealand. PEN is a worldwide organisation that promotes literature and freedom of expression. Today, I want to talk to you about fake news. PEN America has just published a report called Faking News, Fraudulent News and the Fight for Truth. The report defines fake news as demonstrably false information that is being presented as a factual news report with the intention to deceive the public. It does not refer to good faith mistakes. It doesn't refer to news reports that may be considered to reflect a particular bias or worldview, and it doesn't refer to editorial decisions to focus more on one particular issue than another. The PEN report, which surveys fake news over the last few years, divides it into three categories: fraudulent news for profit, fraudulent news for political motives, and government-sponsored misinformation. This is quite a narrow focus to encompass what are seen to be new developments in the news generation and news consumption. PEN's research into fake news found some worrying trends. Fake news, it says, threatens to undermine the faith in the news media. This has already happened. Gallup polls show that in America, a drop in public trust in the media is rated at only 32%. In 1976, a much higher 72% of those polled said they trusted the media. Fake news is also worrying because in its wake, it leaves a lot of public confusion about facts and issues. Fake news is also a threat because it leads to poorly informed and engaged citizens, which is a direct threat to democracy. We are now firmly in the digital age, and most of us are surrounded by media and information. The newspapers and print media may be struggling to make ends meet, but news and information is now more at our fingertips than ever before, on social media, search engines, Facebook, Twitter. We now spend more time with the media than ever, some research putting it as high as an average of 10.5 hours a day. Children aged 5 to 16 years spend an average of 6.5 hours a day in front of screens, compared with only 3 hours in 1995. Kids are also multi-screening, that's watching TV while using an iPad or games console. Kids report getting much of their news online from social platforms, preferring Facebook, followed by YouTube. Few were familiar with the need to vet sources. 31% said they paid very little or no attention to the source of the news content. We need to teach kids the difference between watching something someone posted on Facebook and YouTube and reading something in a newspaper which operates within guidelines established by the Press Council. As of the 1st of January 2017, the Online Media Standards Authority, which regulates online news and current affairs, including TVNZ, MediaWorks and Whale Oil, also came under the jurisdiction of the Press Council. We need to teach the youth and adults to be empowered agents, to be their own gatekeepers, not only mindful of what they read and how they read it, but to be mindful of what they pass on and retweet or post on Facebook. Being an empowered agent is about being able to access information that comes on your screen, and you need to have certain skills. The key skills we need are, we need to ask, what is the purpose of this information? Is it to entertain? Is it to persuade or sell? Or is it news? We need to have some common sense. We also need skepticism and the curiosity to dig deeper and find out more about the news stories. There are fact checker sites out there to help with this. And we need to have the curiosity to search for sources that portray two sides of a story. Penn is interested in a wide range of issues, such as fake news and how it affects our democratic rights. If you want to find out more about Penn and what it does and how you can be involved, follow the links on the New Zealand Society of Authors website to Penn, or contact me, Dana Wensley, at penn@nzauthors.org.nz.
I'm Galen Pound, and you're listening to Top Writers. My guest today is Sally Astridge. Welcome to Top Writers, Sally.
Thank you very much indeed for inviting me. I'm delighted to be here.
Right, Time Twins is your first children's book. What was the motivation behind it?
I was actually approached by Arne, who had written his version of the story about 5 or 6 years ago. He was half of it set in Sweden, half of it set in New Zealand, and he was having a terrible time with the New Zealand portion. So he approached me and said, would I be prepared to write along with him as a partnership?
Right, now the story is about?
It's about two children who are united by the fact that they were born at exactly the same second, one in Sweden, one in New Zealand. They, because of this, and because they have a certain sensitivity, shall we say, they call it spiritualism, they are able to communicate, actually to travel. They're never quite sure whether their bodies go with it or it's just their minds that arrive there, but they form quite a tight bond.
Is this the first time you've co-written a book?
Absolutely, and it was delightful.
Right. How was it different from writing on your own?
Well, first of all, I have to give full credit to Arne. He was the most attractive person with whom to write. He only had good things to say, and if he had something that he didn't quite agree with, he would couch it in the most spectacularly tactful way.
So how did you cope with him being half a world away in Sweden?
It's known as email.
All right. Okay, could you please read something from the book for us?
Yes. Can I precede it by saying what has happened?
Yes, please do.
The children are both 11, rising 12. Because Tamati, the boy in New Zealand, is part of the intermediate section, he's doing enterprise. I think enterprise is a wonderful thing for children to do. They have to set up their own businesses, they have to run them, and I think that whoever came up with that idea was onto a winner. Tam and his team of three other children have to each earn $40, and this is how his best friend, 11-year-old Dylan, does so. Dylan has agreed to babysit Imogen for 4 hours at $10 an hour, 2 hours one day, 2 hours the next. Immy is such an easy baby, I think that's the simplest job of all. But it does mean that his mum can get on with the motel's books without interruption. We play a video game while Immy does what she usually does, which is put things into a bowl and take them out again. Dylan got his PlayStation from his grandparents. They're rich and live in Auckland. We play for about an hour, and then suddenly Immy stops playing and makes this rumbly, farty noise. It's followed by the very worst stink you've ever smelt. Worse than Manu, worse than anything. I'll have to clean her up, Dylan says, putting down his PlayStation controller. Call your mum, I urge him. Mothers are the only person who can handle stuff as gross as that. Honestly, I think they've been given different noses. Nah, says Dylan. I'm the babysitter. It's my job, not Mum's. I gawk at him. Dylan picks his little sister up gingerly, a hand under each arm, and carries her to the bathroom. A thin stream of bright yellow poo escapes and leaves a trail on the floor. He lies her down on a plastic-covered changing mat. I hover in the doorway, pinching my nose. It's totally grim. The baby has pooed so hard, the stuff has gone right up to her hair at the back. It's like an explosion of mess. Dylan removes her clothes layer by layer. Everything, everything has poo on it. And the stink makes me feel so bad, I have to go outside. I retch for several minutes. It takes a long time because Dylan has to bath her and wash her hair, put on fresh clothes and a clean nappy. Then, when she's back on the floor playing with her toys, he has to clean up the clothes, clean up the trail of poo that has escaped, clean up the changing mat, and clean the bath. He does it all. I reckon he earns every single penny of his babysitting fee. Coco gets her money by weeding for her mum and for the neighbours. She tells us she wears her iPod and listens to her downloads while she pulls out couch grass and groundsel and rarity and oxalis from around the rows of peas and beans. It's really dull work, but she does get her money. And she can argue and say, but, to the peas and the beans, and they won't care. Drippy Sabby turns up at school on Monday and tells us that over the weekend she did a sponsored walk. Her dad works in real estate, and all his clients and his colleagues at the office have sponsored Sabby. She only walked 7 kilometres, but she earned $155.50. That's more than the rest of us put together.
It sounds absolutely intriguing. Now, the book was quickly bought in Stockholm by Lind & Company and launched at the Gothenburg Book Fair in Sweden in 2014, which is huge. And the first edition written in Swedish was sold out in a few short weeks. And it also got high praise from all the children who read it. So why has it taken so long to get it published in New Zealand?
If I could answer that, I would probably be writing for the world. The fact of the matter is that people are very, very touchy about the... I mean, as we all know, the whole book industry is in crisis. I am just delighted that Macro Press picked up the book, have been absolutely wonderful. Macro Press, by the way, is based in Wellington. Their editors have been most supportive, and we are ready to go later this month.
How did the Maori part of it go down in Sweden? Because it's quite a different culture to them.
Obviously, the books are slightly different. Arne had to explain the Maori parts as I have to explain the Swedish parts.
Can you give us an example of that?
Right. Well, we use at one part of it the story of Hinamoa and Tutanakai. I don't think there's a New Zealand child who would need to be told that story. But in Sweden, it was totally new. Similarly, in Sweden, everyone, if you say Lucia, knows what it's about. The festival of St. Lucia in December. I had to explain that to New Zealand children.
It's an amazing festival. I was actually in Sweden for the festival of St. Lucia. Would you like just to explain what it is?
Yes. It used originally to be on the shortest day of the year, but because that coincided pretty well with Christmas, they've moved it to the early in December. And the children usually, and certainly in this particular case, vote who will be Lucia. It will be a girl. She will wear a crown of light on her hair. And basically, it's the business of trying to persuade the sun to come back again.
And they actually parade around the shops and the streets and everything.
And the school, with boys being stars and singing. And, oh, it's very, very much loved.
And it's very spectacular. How do you think children's expectations of a story differ today than when perhaps you and I were younger?
I think that as much as anything, children are much more immediate. They're used to having results now. They won't delay it. When I was growing up, I just hoovered up everything. These days, I think children want action more or less on page 2.
And also the toilet humour that we never got in books like What Katie Did and that sort of thing. are quite different even though.
And they're also used to Twitter, all of those immediate things that come to mind.
Did that make it more difficult for you?
I had to rely on Arne. He has published about 80 children's books. He knows what he's talking about. One of the things he said was, don't compromise on your vocabulary, but make your sentence structure pretty simple. And that's what I've done. So I think it's enough of a challenge for children between 9 and 12 to keep them involved. It's not a short book. It's about 300 pages. But there's a lot of humour, a lot of action, and quite a bit of adventure.
It sounds absolutely wonderful. Was it a difficult change in mindset for you going from adult novels to children's?
No, not at all. I also write short stories. I have grandchildren. I have to confess my own children are a little outside that particular bracket these days. But the grandchildren have been very supportive as well.
And have they read the New Zealand version?
Not yet.
Not yet?
No.
How did the translation and editing of the book go?
I worked, when I was living in America, I worked as an editor. And one of the things that I can say, hand on heart, is that you cannot edit your own book. It becomes too familiar to you. Your eye sees what it wants to see and not what it should see. So I have to rely very strongly on other people to edit my work as I will edit theirs.
So how is the editing process going, or is it already done?
No, we're still working on the occasional word. I have to accept that she who pays the piper calls the tune. Fighting against your editor is probably the easiest way never again to be published. So you quickly want to build up a bond with the editor and get her on your side. Part of that is saying yes quite often. I do. I try very hard to be as obliging as possible, even when I am gritting my teeth.
How did you get on with the Maori words and the Maori language in the book?
Once again, I had to rely heavily on friends who know. I have really good Maori friends who have come to my support. I also had to rely quite heavily on children and people who work with children because, quite obviously, as you'll hear from my voice, I'm not of that age.
Right. Now, the translation, who did the translation of it?
Oh, Arne originally handed over the English version to me. I did my writing. He was so good about this. He said, do what you like with it. And one thing I did was remove about a third. Arne is one of those lovely writers who tells you every item that was eaten for breakfast. I removed some of that, put in what I needed, and once again, he was so obliging, so sweet and helpful, and then he took my version and translated it back into Swedish for the Swedish, and I think I'm right in saying it's now being also translated into German, Norwegian, and possibly Danish.
It's interesting that the book has done so well overseas, but struggling to find a publisher here.
It's the way of the writing world. We are very disadvantaged by this. Most of our major publishers have closed down. We have to rely on the small independent ones, such as Macro Press, who have been hugely obliging.
Right. Now, the song you've chosen today is Fool on the Hill by the Beatles. Why?
It was part of our growing up, I suppose. We were young at that stage when the Beatles came out. They burst onto the public arena, and it was just like that, like a cloudburst of excitement. And that's why it takes me back to that time.
Right, now we're going to listen to The Fool on the Hill.
Day after day, alone on a hill, the man with the foolish grin is keeping perfectly still. But nobody wants to know him, they can see that he's just a fool. And he never gives an answer, but the fool on the hill sees the sun going down, and the eyes in his head see the world spinning round. perfectly loud, but nobody ever hears him or the sound he appears to make, and he never seems to notice. But the fool on the hill sees the sun going down, and the eyes in his head see the world spinning round. And nobody seems to like him, they can tell what he wants to do, and he never shows his feelings. But the fool on the hill sees the sun going down, and the eyes in his head see the world spinning
I'm Galen Pound, and you've been listening to Top Writers. Thank you so much, Sally, for taking time to talk with us today. Now, the English version of Time Twins is being launched when?
Hopefully? Are hoping it will be launched on the December the 18th at Page and Blackmore. I haven't had this confirmed yet, but that is my hope. And the book will be out in the shops mid-November.
And also available online?
Definitely available online from Macro Press.
And I look forward to reading it. This is the last interview for this session of Top Writers, but hopefully we'll be back next year. A podcast of this and previous programs, upcoming events such as Sally's book launch, and information about Top Writers can be found on www.topwriters.co.nz.
Thank you very much.
Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this podcast available by funding the Access Internet Radio Project. Other great programs from Fresh FM are available through iTunes, the Stitcher app, the TuneIn Radio app, and our website, freshfm.net.